Produced by PI Media.
Hey listeners, welcome to the Checkpoint Research Podcast. I'm Ren Levin. Every year, Checkpoint releases an annual report, a deep dive analysis of the major data breaches, the most prevalent malware in each part of the world, the fastest rising trends in hacker methodologies, the new threats facing emerging devices, and more from the year that just passed. Think of it like cybersecurity Spark Notes. Except these Spark Notes are very long, detailed documents, and not all of us have the time to read 60 pages of statistics and analysis. That's why in this episode of our show, Nate Nelson, the writer of our podcast, interviewed Naomi Rona, the writer for this year's report. In the half hour that follows, you'll hear about all the biggest, most important items, the things you simply got to know to stay up to date. So, without further ado, here's your 2020 Cybersecurity Year in Review cheat sheet. Enjoy.
My name is Naomi Rona. I am a senior threat intelligence analyst at Checkpoint. I have been working for Checkpoint Threat Intelligence Group for the past 5 years, since 2016.
Tell me about the document that we're going to be discussing today.
The annual attack trends report is one of the biggest, most significant documents that we release. It's released on a yearly basis. It covers the trends and the threats and the biggest attacks that we've seen on the passing year. So it summarizes the year that has ended in preparation for the new year.
Where does all this information come from, and what do you guys do to analyze it?
The vast majority of the report is fully statistics based. It is, of course, accompanied by our estimations and conclusions as analysts. We have data that is collected anonymously from our customers based on their consent. So two major databases play a role here. The first one is ThreatCloud. ThreatCloud is our indicators of compromise database, which is added millions of network and file signatures on a daily basis. And then the second database that we have is called Data Lake, and it is essentially the database that collects the hits from ThreatCloud. So it collects attack attempts from all over the world, again, based on customers who gave their consent for us to be able to collect their logs. And once a year, we aggregate all of this data and we analyze it based on malware type, based on malware family, based on specific attack vectors, based on the top most leveraged file types, and so on.
What kinds of cyber threats have you guys seen trending the furthest upwards of late, which have stalled or sort of decreased in significance?
So I want to talk about three of the most significant threats. So the first one is actually a trend that has reemerged, sort of like a vintage trend, which is called vishing or voice phishing. So voice phishing attacks, we know them from the renowned tech support scam. So a known scam that took place in the early 2000s in which people would have received an advertisement online stating that their machine has been damaged or infected by a malware. Of course, the advertiser had no way of knowing whether it happened or not. In the process of the alleged remediation, the user would have had their credit card information stolen, as well as their machine accessed. And this was then. And what we see now is actually quite an interesting comeback of this trend. But this time we're talking about much bigger, well-prepared, well-tailored corporate attacks in which information is first gathered about the victim. And only then the attack takes place, and it's very persuasive. I think what's interesting about voice phishing attacks is that it can come in many infection processes. So it can be a part of a multi-stage attack, but it can also be the first phase of an attack. And I'm going to give two examples. So the first one is a very known case that took place in July, that approximately 120 Twitter accounts extremely high profile entities, such as Joe Biden or Barack Obama or Jeff Bezos, have been hacked and have been leveraged for a cryptocurrency scam, urging people to donate for charity or something like that. And several months later, it has been revealed that the scam was the result of a successful voice phishing attack that targeted several Twitter employees. And they were attacked via phone, and they accidentally gave access to administrative tools to the attackers. So that's the first example of an attack that sort of started with phishing. And another interesting case that took place towards the end of the year is a campaign by a known North Korean APT called Lazarus. Lazarus launched a campaign that targets employees of major corporates that took place on LinkedIn. And so it was a very sophisticated and well-planned campaign in which they had their members impersonating major corporates' HR representatives, and they actually constructed very reliable LinkedIn accounts and so on. And they reached out to the victims, offering them allegedly very prestigious positions in the companies that they actually don't work for. And towards the stage of the attack, which is essentially the malicious document that is sent disguised as a contract, they actually threw a real live phone interview, which was actually the voice phishing attack. And this just shows that voice phishing can be integrated in a middle stage of an attack as a means to gain credibility by the attacker.
All right, so phishing is the first significant trend. What's the second?
The second one that I would like to mention is double extortion ransomware. So a ransomware attack in which the victim is not only having a ransom demanded, but the attacker also threats to have the victim's sensitive information published online unless the ransom is paid on time. We've seen an alarming increase in that trend as well. So I have a really interesting story about double extortion ransomware attacks, which is the story of the Finnish psychotherapy chain Vastamo. So Vastamo is a massive psychotherapy service provider. It operates in Finland. It also provides services for the public sector. So it also operates under a state contract. It has over 40,000 employees. And in October, the company has been attacked by ransomware. In retrospective, we understand that the attackers had gained access to their network approximately a year and a half prior to the actual attack, to the actual ransom demand. So they were attacked. And around October, it was published, and they demanded a ransom of, I think, 40 bitcoins, which was around $500,000. So quite a normal ransom. We now see ransom demands that are much higher. So the ransom was demanded and the company hasn't paid the ransom yet. And then what happened, which was very unique, is that the attackers began sending individual threats to specific patients of Vastamo. And of course, in those cases, the ransom demand was a lot lower because it was an individual and not a company. But still, just imagine having an attacker reaching out to you by email, threatening to publish no less than your own personal psychotherapy notes. I mean, I think it's pretty much as sensitive as it goes. And it was quite a havoc in Finland. The government interfered. State mental health centers were flooded with requests. And of course, it made a lot of headlines. And essentially, this is the first case in which we see sort of like a double extortion. So threats that are sent to both the actual victims and the company that was attacked.
All right, Naomi, so you mentioned a couple of the top trends. Last but not least is remote access platform attacks. What can you tell us about this one?
At the start of the year, at the start of the pandemic, we've seen a vast increase in the attack attempts against VPN platforms and remote desktop connections. So what attackers were searching back then was vulnerable connections, insecure connections. Towards the end of the year, we've seen an improvement, so sort of the second phase to this trend, which is vulnerability hunting in the field of remote access product. And we've actually begun seeing flaws in major services being revealed both by researchers and by hackers. And we expect this trend to grow significantly in the upcoming year. So these are the top three, I would say. And when it comes to a decrease, I think what I would mention is really a malware type called CryptoMiner. So crypto mining malware has sort of taken the world by storm approximately 2 years ago at around 2019. We've seen the emergence of the web-based crypto miner. So a crypto miner that isn't downloaded to your machine, but you come across it when visiting a tampered website. And then the amount of CPU leveraged from your machine can go as far as 97% of your CPU. So that was a prominent trend at around 2019. And towards the end of 2020, we can really say for sure that we've seen a decrease in this field. I mean, if then we were talking about approximately 30% of the global distribution of malware types, so now we're talking about a decrease to 20%. So of course, it's still a prominent type, but it's not as prominent as it used to be. And we also see sort of a switch between web-based crypto miners to the traditional what we call drive-by crypto miners, which are crypto miners that are downloaded to your machine via mail or via web or via any normal infection channel that we know. And that's it.
What's your prevailing theory as to why the trends that are going up are going up? You know, voice phishing, double extortion, is it just that these are very effective methods of hacking, or are there other contextual reasons?
I would say that several general trends play a role here. Some more contemporary, some less. First of all, there's a general trend that we see in almost every field concerning almost every malware type, which is always the swift from endpoint attacks to corporate attacks. And this is me talking about phishing specifically. So phishing back then was an endpoint attack. Users were targeted individually based on online advertisements and so on. And now what we see is actually the shift to corporate attacks. And this is what we see here. So I would say that when it comes to this trend, it's sort of what the time has demanded, because we've seen this trend happening in the world of ransomware, of course, and in many others. So this is for phishing. And I think double extortion, ransomware, and also the increase in the attacks against remote access platforms are both pretty much direct result of the systematic changes resulted by the COVID-19 pandemic, which of course has been widely discussed here before. And the most prominent example is when it comes to remote access platforms. So the systematic changes at the start of the pandemic has led to a very rapid switch from working at an office to home offices and to sort of the construction of really fast hybrid networks. This has led to a rapid increase in the use of remote access platforms such as VPN connections. And so it was only natural that attackers would have shifted their focus accordingly to attacking those connections. Since the changes within corporates were very, very fast, it wasn't always very well thought of and planned and fully secured, at least not at the beginning. And so it was really good timing. But I do have to say that the actual rapidness in which the attackers have sort of shifted their focus towards this field of product was very, very impressive. I mean, they were very quick to react. The same could be said when talking about double extortion attacks, for example, and their current focus on healthcare institutions. So attackers quickly realized that the most sensitive and also the most flooded sector of our time is the healthcare sector. And so it would probably generate the greatest revenue, demanding ransom and crippling networks of those organizations. And so very rapidly, we've seen a sharp increase in the attack rate against healthcare organizations, most notably in the field of double extortion ransomware.
Is there anything else that's worth saying about social engineering attacks, how attackers' methods have been changing and evolving?
Yeah, of course. So naturally, I have to mention at this point that we've seen a heavy phishing targeting that is based on COVID-19 themes. And this, of course, has been observed since the start of the year. But aside from that, we have seen quite an impressive technological improvement in the field of phishing, which is a new technique we call thread hijacking. So thread hijacking is simple yet effective. The attack process is as follows. So a primary victim is infected either via web or via mail or via an existing malware or bot that already resides on the machine. The attacker then obtains access to this victim's inbox. And then what the attacker does manually is that they start forwarding existing emails from the user's inbox to his business colleagues. So in the vast majority of cases, to people that are already CC'd on existing threads within that user's inbox. These messages, these correspondences are forwarded along with a malicious attachment added by the hacker. And of course, the attachment is named, granted a name aligned with the subject of the conversation. So it could be a business document discussed prior to the final email in the thread already, or a proposal on the same subject. And then very simply, business colleagues of the primary victim receive those documents, and it's very persuading, and it's very hard to know that it's phishing because it's an actual correspondence that you've been CC'd on, that you know, a subject you know, a sender you know, and then you simply open the document and you're infected. And this method has proved itself to be successful. There has been an incident in which the Ministry of Justice of Quebec has been successfully hit by an attack leveraging this technique. And yes, so again, it's simple, but it simply works.
Can we talk now about the biggest stories in cyber of the past year? So I'm talking about the breaches, the hacks that changed fundamentally how we think about cybersecurity these days that really, really made an impact.
Okay. So first of all, I know it's already been spoken here, but I have to mention the SolarWinds supply chain attack. And one more significant attack is the attack against the Düsseldorf University Hospital in Germany. So it was a double extortion ransomware attack. One of many attacks against the healthcare institutions that took place throughout 2020. But what stood out here is the fact that a patient in need of urgent treatment had to be transferred to another hospital as she was collected by the ambulance because the hospital's network had been entirely crippled and they couldn't admit new patients. And the nearest hospital after the University Hospital of Düsseldorf was 20 miles away, and the patient had died as a result of the delay. And what's new here, and we definitely hope not to see again next year, is that this was the first case of a direct death as a direct result of a ransomware attack, and the local police had actually launched an inquiry, a homicide inquiry, due to this double ransomware attack. So it may not be a first, but it's actually the recorded first incident in which the consequences of a ransomware attack had been so severe.
What, in your view, among everything that you've gathered in this report, is the most interesting or the most surprising, unexpected finding that you came across?
Okay, I have to say that there were many, and I find the report fascinating. But it's not at all because I was in charge of writing it. But I have to say that one of the statistics that most surprised me were actually the statistics of the exploitation of remote access vulnerabilities on the second part of the year. So as I mentioned before, we've seen at the start of the year an increase in the attacks against remote access platforms. Towards the end of the year, we began seeing both attackers and the research community hunting for vulnerabilities in popular remote access products. But what was really surprising was when towards the end of the year, like we did for any other field, we actually looked at the data, and we've just seen crazy changes when comparing 2019 and 2020. So, for example, we've seen a 2100% increase in the exploit attempts of Citrix products, and we've seen a 40% increase in the exploit attempts of Cisco products, and generally the exploit attempts of various VPN products throughout 2020 were 7 times higher than they were in 2019. So at the start of the process of writing the report, we always estimate and we always look into major significant incidents. But then towards the end of the year, we look at the data and we see whether it validates our estimations in this case. And in this case, it was even more extreme than we thought. So, I mean, it was quite at the climax climax of the pandemic that they've already begun looking at the long term, at vulnerability hunting, which is, I mean, it takes time, but eventually it can pay off.
Now that we spent all this time talking about the sort of negative stuff, let's talk about some of the positives. What have been the positive developments in cyberspace in the year 2020?
Yeah. So after carefully reviewing several very alarming attack trends, like the increase in attacks against healthcare institutions, it was actually very nice to review sort of the optimistic part of our threat landscape. And we have indeed found results. Generally, I would say that both corporates and global and state law enforcement agencies have invested significant efforts in mitigating top global threats, and most specifically threats that are a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. And we've seen advancements in several fields. So first of all, we've seen quite a few extraditions of cyber criminals, which most of them are the result of extensive international cooperation between several companies or several agencies. We've also seen global takedown operations aiming to disrupt the activities of major botnets or major malware families generally. And the most prominent one that took place during the year was the takedown of TrickBot, which is both a botnet and an infosteerer. And at this point, I can very briefly mention that there has also been a very impressive takedown attempt of Emotet, the biggest botnet of 2020. But it took place on January 2021, and I have to save it for the next report. So I'm not going to elaborate on that. And of course, lastly, we have seen some very nice initiatives aiming to provide sort of like the cyber community's response to the threats that the COVID-19 pandemic has brought us. And one of them is the CTI League. So the CTI League, so a global initiative involving hundreds of volunteers from all over the world, aiming to assist healthcare institutions in establishing cyber practices and threat prevention measures.
Finally, Naomi, what should listeners take away from this discussion and from your report?
Since one of the primary goals of the report is awareness, that I do have to mention, please beware of threats sent via email. Please implement proper protections to email. The most prominent document type sent over email is Microsoft Office files. And so this is the first very sort of direct takeaway of the report. Additionally, it has already been discussed when talking about the SolarWinds incident, but I do have to mention that we've seen that in 2020, unlike years before, we have seen corporate and generally company networks undergoing massive changes. While these changes are necessary and are probably here to stay, networks should be constructed very carefully. Mobile, cloud, endpoint, and network.
And that's it. Thanks to Naomi Rona for condensing all that data for us. And for more information or to read the annual report itself, visit blog.checkpoint.com. For more episodes of our podcast, visit research.checkpoint.com and look for the Checkpoint Radio banner at the top right corner, or search for Checkpoint Research in your favorite podcast app. CPR is produced by PI Media. Learn more at podil.net. Bye-bye.
Produced by PI Media.